In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey, it's Jim Hoffman from EMS Hours.
And Josh Knapp.
Josh, you are from wantnu.com. That's WANTYNU.com. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you can buy an oxygen. And you can buy an oxygen wrench there.
You're calling me out now?
No. I want to make sure that people know where they can find you before we get started.
You can absolutely find me at wantnu.com or on Facebook.
/WantNew as well.
So you're going to ask me what WantNew stands for? Because I know you're always curious.
I'm dying to know, absolutely.
Well, don't be dying, because we got to keep you around. We got to keep you around a little while.
Well, I don't know. I'm just surrounded by people that are trying to kill me, so.
Yeah, well, that's because you work in EMS.
So WantNew stands for?
We ain't nothing till you need us.
Huh. Okay. Gotcha. And people throw to that, and they can buy.
Isn't that true, though? About
and they can buy some oxygen wrenches at that website, right? And then your Facebook page, they can interact with you and find out all kinds of great information about the wrench and also about EMS and, you know, some thoughts. And
you know what? You know what they also can get? Links to your website and that fabulous, fabulous product, TurboMedic.
Oh, that's okay.
Which has saved my ass. More than once.
Well, I want to say hi to John over in the chat room, and we had Earth Explorer.
At OneUnion 801, the webcast.
Yeah.
John, you stirring the pot?
Not yet.
Not to me.
Not quite yet, either. Well, this episode is sponsored by a paying sponsor.
That's not John.
And no, it's an EMS manager. And you can go to emsmanager.net.
With my time, but these people put up their cash. They put their money where their mouth is, and they support us.
Yeah. So go check out EMS. Can I read the domain name, please, before you start rambling on and everybody jumps out of the chat room like they do every week?
Well, if people go to URL you're about to give them, make sure that they mention that Jim and Josh sent them there.
Exactly. And they can go to emsmanager.net for a free trial of their software. It's an employee scheduling and management software. But I'll go ahead and read some more about that a little bit later on in the show so we can give them a little more highlights and let people know more about their software. So tonight... Well, one topic anyway that I wanted to sort of talk a little bit about, Josh, and this is prompted. I wanted to get into this last week, but we didn't have time. So it's about screening people that want to be in EMS. And it's funny that Bob Sullivan wrote a blog post about this over at emspatientperspective.com and talked a little bit about, you know, how it's very strange how we don't do a better job at picking people for the amount of...
You know what? It is not strange at all. Just stop that. Stop that. You know, everybody bitches about how we have to have higher standards and how we have to have all this other stuff, and yet... They want a pulse in the seat. If you can fog a mirror and pass a test, you know, you can get the job.
Yeah. I mean, we've actually said on the show a few times that one of the requirements to be an EMS is to fail the police test.
Right. That's funny.
And while there is a certain amount of truth to that, you know, I guess the it points out the underlying current of some of this. I mean, we get a lot of responsibility in EMS, and we get you know, we get put in the back of an ambulance pretty much it's you and the patient most of the time, with your partner up front driving, with people who are very, you know, very exposed. You know, they're vulnerable to anything that we do to them, you know. And, you know, this is one thing, like, you know, you go to EMS training, you go to your training and all, you know, the matter of, you know, how they tell you a lot of times, always introduce yourself, always tell the patient what you're doing as you're doing it. And I think that's part of, I guess, respecting this responsibility we have when we are with them one-on-one. But when it comes to these, you know, background checks, you know, I mean, how many times, you know, especially nowadays, we talked about this last week, I think, Josh, and even the week before that, about social media, right? And how now you've got these sort of, you know, attention being driven, you know, towards, you know, things that are going on that are, that sort of could be, you know, breaking the public trust a little bit. Don't you think? I mean, don't you think it in a way that people start to think, you know, that you know, the bigger percentage of people that act or do or feel the same way that some of these social media stories have come out?
Yeah, you know, and it's like it's the tip of the iceberg, right? It's right. Just, you know, it's even though they've caught a couple, there are many, many more who actually are still doing it. And then there are many, many, many more who might do it for themselves or take pictures or even just say stuff or treat patients in a way that is really not becoming a professional service.
Yeah, you know, the thing is some places do, I guess, do have more stringent background checks for their employees, and they go beyond just, you know, the person checking or filling out, you know, the application and employment form saying, no, I've never been arrested, I don't have a felony, no, I've never done drugs, and there's no, a lot of places don't, you know, really investigate more beyond somebody, let's
insurance
say
insurance requirements.
They meet the they'll meet those requirements, but they don't go more as far as the what should be a bigger requirement, and to make sure that people don't have, something hiding in the closet that can come out later on, and that could affect the patients they're taking care of, their partner, the agency that they work for, you know. I mean, even as far as the psychological exam, you know, being able to handle.
What about just the responsibility? I mean, you know, I find it crazy that, you know, and I'll date myself here. I'm of the generation that was able to walk into a bar when I turned 18, and it was considered a rite of passage. Oh, you're 18? You know, you get to have your legal drink. And Lord knows we were drinking long before then, you know, as teenagers, because the whole law and everything was sort of lax. Now, you may wonder where I'm going with this. However, if you think about it, what's the drinking age today? 21. Why is it? Because we consider as a society that 18-year-olds are, or people under the age of 21 are capable of serving in the armed forces, but not responsible enough to not break the law when they drink alcohol, meaning drink and drive or something else like that.
Yeah.
And so, but we're perfectly happy to put them, you know, give them 120 hours of training and put them in a vehicle of which you're supposed to use extremely good judgment in the times that you are going to go around motor vehicle laws. You know, and a vehicle with lights and sirens, a vehicle that is not going to be harassed in most cases for speeding. And you give that to an 18-year-old. I mean,
yeah, you're right. You have a good point there, though, because, yeah, you do have a good point there, because just even if you just start at that end of it, the operation of, you know, of the vehicles and you know, driving lights and sirens and you know, going above speed limits and going through red lights and stop signs and all that, which is a whole nother, you know, podcast on its own as far as whether we should even be doing that. You are giving people the ability, you know, in a lot of ways to be able to do that. You know, Josh, I think we have one of our chat room members on the phone here to
awesome.
Give a little insight on their end. So let's
bring him in.
And we can get there.
Hello. Hi, guys. How you doing today?
Hey, how are you doing?
Who is this?
I'm doing pretty good. This is Earth Explorer.
Okay. You want to give your name?
Huh? Yeah, my name is Faith.
Okay.
Hey, Faith. Nice to meet you.
Hi. You too.
So you actually passed the police physical and the written test,
mm-hmm.
and you chose to go into EMS instead.
Yes.
Now, I've got to know why.
Well, it was in San Diego at the time, and I was dating one of the police officers over there in San Diego, and I found, you know, I went on model ride-along, and it sounded interesting, so I went and took the test and passed everything, and then I really sat back and looked at it on a couple more ride-alongs, and I think a lot of the frustration for me was seeing that they would have a caller, they would take them in, and it seemed like a lot of times before they were done with the paperwork, these, you know, guys were out back on the street. It seemed like their hands
were
tied.
It's okay to say that.
With everything they were doing, it seems like their hands were tied, and any time they went to do their job properly, like with as far as restraint or how they would conduct themselves, they're always being pushed back and being held accountable for things that they did right that the public saw as being done wrong. And I didn't like the frustration of all that, and I just found EMS a lot more interesting because I've always been interested in the medical field, and so I really followed something that I was more comfortable with. And my interest was there.
So now do you work full-time for EMS right now?
No. Right now I'm a part-time volunteer, and I'm also a part-time, I call myself a drug runner. I deliver IV meds and supplies and TPN and other liquid nutrients to patients in their homes.
Okay.
Do you
now,
want
to... As a volunteer now, did the volunteer agency have any sort of screening to let you start volunteering and working on the ambulances there?
Well, when I first started there, I went through, you know, my first sector and went on a lot of rides. I was a third person for a while until I was comfortable, and they were comfortable with what I was doing and my patient care and my responsibilities. And Tuesday evening, it'll be my first shift on my own.
Okay.
Awesome. So this is relatively new into EMS.
Yes.
So you still have that glow of doing good around you.
No.
You do good. No. What are you talking about?
No, I've seen through a lot. You know, it's not a purple haze anymore. I see it's a big gray area, and I see what a lot of patients are. You know, that a lot of it is not emergency care. A lot of it is going in and holding a hand, being there, being their company, and, you know, sometimes just visiting them on the ride to the hospital.
Yeah.
I know it's not what I expected when I first began, but, you know, through Facebook and talking with other people in EMS, I really see what it's like, but I still love it.
You know, I just got to say, you know, up until the time that your first patient just decides to say, you know, F you, pulls down their pants and urinates or worse on the side of your bus, you know, there's this soft, wonderful glow that you're actually doing, you know, good work. Yeah, and granted, I'm being a little facetious here because there is a good aspect where the things that you said were kind of true, where it's just important enough to be there, to be present. You know, sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, keep in mind, a lot of times we get called when somebody's having the worst day of their life, you know, or damn close to it. And, you know, we're that sort of intervention, as crazy as it sounds, of sanity that says, it's okay, you know, been there, done that, I can help you through this, and we're going to mm-hmm. get you to better care. And that's certainly, you know, an important part of this job. But, you know, how do you feel about the people, have you had anybody that you've worked with or been exposed to in the department that you were wondering why the hell are they there?
Or how they even got there.
Well, sometimes I feel that way about myself being so new. It's like, you know, because there's so much that you learn so much in class, but it's like learning a language. You learn everything proper and everything's perfect in class. And when you get out in the
this
field, there's so
really
much of a gray area. You know, a lot of things aren't done the way they are in class. Nothing follows the book.
Well, I mean, that's true, but also, like Josh is saying, you have to sometimes, I wonder, you come in contact with people that you have to say, do they have the emotional, psychological ability to be, you know, in EMS? And,
yeah, some
you know,
people
who's
don't.
Making
they
that judgment?
The, right,
you know,
the
some,
first
well,
time,
some people
I
get
think...
in, they stick with, and they don't leave because it's like they just, they can't face that fact.
Faith, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I know that, you know, there was one person one time that, you know, when I was writing third person, there was somebody there that they were relatively new, and they always saw it as being pretty, and then the first time things got really gross and everything, they're like, oh, wait a minute.
Wait,
you know,
I don't
again,
like this side of blood.
Right, but see, the thing is, too, I was a preschool teacher for many, many years, so the sight of snot and poop and pee and, you know, being thrown up on and everything like that, I've been through that already. They were just a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
You know, so I think going in, being that I've had the exposure and I understand a lot of the things and the real aspects of it, I think it's made it a lot easier for me because I'm not in there knowing, thinking it's all pretty and sweet and I'm going to say lies every night. I don't, you know, I see more for the what it really is.
Yeah, and in a way, you know, I'm not going to disqualify you from this conversation by any stretch, but in a way, you've already been vetted because they do a hell of a lot more, at least you'd hope, in, you know, screening the individuals who are going to be working closely with our children than they do with people who, you know, may be doing physical exams in the, you know, alone in the back of an ambulance. And so you come into this with a little bit more maturity, a little bit more experience. Your expectations are probably a little bit more level set just because of those other two factors. So, you know, and we're talking about some of the individuals that you just sort of scratch your head and go, well, what are you doing there? And
right.
And we sort of, and at the beginning of the podcast, you sort of heard we made the joke, and it's sort of a standing joke within the EMS. How do you qualify for EMS? You failed the police.
Yeah. Well, I know when I was in the EMT class itself, there were a few people that just thought it was going to be all sweet, you know, all nice and roses, and that they were going to be, you know, out in the field saving people and everything. And I'm just looking at them thinking, you have really no clue that it's mostly being shit on, spit on, yelled at, you know, trying to carry 400 people, you know, 400-pound person downstairs. It's not all sweet and pretty.
So
and
with that understanding, what drew you in?
I love it. I love the medical field. I like holding, you know, just going out there, being there, and I don't know. I've always been attracted to it. Like when I was growing up, I wanted to be Quincy. I loved Gage and DeSoto. Even as a teenager, I used to watch all the surgeries on TV and, you know, like wherever I was, my friends, if somebody got hurt, they'd all get me. It's like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'd be the one over there holding them together, putting on the bandages and taking them to the hospital. And it was just like a natural fit. It was just something that drew me into it more than I drew myself into.
That's really cool. Now the question is: this is sort of a rest stop on your travels to another destination? It sounds
not
like you have.
Not at 46 years old.
So, are you planning on just increasing your studies, increasing your time, becoming a medic, and working that route?
I don't know. I think probably just for a long, you know, quite a while, stay as an EMT. I don't see myself as being a medic, but I do enjoy the job, and I do respect the medics I work with.
You know, it's funny, you talk about, the people that were in your class that didn't really realize or didn't understand what they were sort of getting into. And you talk about something like the police department. Before you go to the academy and do your police training, you know, they do a whole battery of tests and everything to see if you have even just the basic capabilities to handle police work, you know, before you even get into the academy. Whereas with EMS, there isn't any of that. You can pay whatever it is to go get your patch and, you know, get that training.
Yeah, the training,
you know, welcome
really,
aboard.
That's what I found interesting was when I went to the class and then started, you know, with the ride-alongs and everything, that the training is almost nil. And it amazes me because the job we're doing, I would think that we'd have more training than most of the other fields out there, but we don't. And sometimes it's kind of scary. It's like, okay, I'm being thrown out there to do all this, but the training is so limited compared to, like you're saying, with the police officers, with the firefighters. I mean, there's always drills, and they're being, you know, they have a lot more life learning or realistic learning before they're put out in the field by themselves. But we're not.
Yeah, that is something that we've talked about on the show a few times, too, where we mentioned how, you know, there's not a lot of initial, you know, training and education and field internships and things like that. And then it's sort of left up to the agency that you get to after class to sort of, you know, fill in those gaps and to be able to provide that, you know, those drills and provide additional training. In some places, you know, you're ride as a third on the ambulance for, you know, a year before you're allowed to be by yourself.
But I've also heard quite often you could train a chimpanzee to be an EMT. So it's like, okay, do we really need the training? Do we not need the training? Is it really that simple? Is it more complex?
Well,
and I think there's a line going down the middle, but I don't think anybody can come to an agreement. I think there's really people sway really heavy on either side, but there's no middle to it.
I think part of that is because I think the skills themselves might not be all that difficult. It's when it's the understanding of when you're using them, why you're using them, who you're going to use them on. You know, that's where it starts to come into play, where you know it takes a little bit more than a chimpanzee to do the job.
Oh, I agree.
You know, that's where you kind of cross that line. But I think that there is a mentality of that. And that's what I think ends up keeping us where we're not getting paid what we should. We're not getting the benefits that we should. We're not getting a lot of the things that should happen because people have that mentality that, well, it's not that hard. You get in the ambulance, go somewhere, and you just drag somebody to the hospital. And
that's well, really I get paid about the same to deliver drugs as I do as I would if I was a paid EMT.
Yeah.
And the EMTs don't get paid much more than the preschool teachers. Preschool teachers are getting paid about $8.50 an hour to $9 an hour. Hello? You know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so it's kind of low there. What state are you in again?
I'm in Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that they don't do all that much there for medics either as far as pay goes.
No.
Yeah, so it's a little tricky with that, I guess, you know, when it comes to, you know, where we're headed on all that.
Can you hear me now? I was trying to join the conversation a number of times, and I'm sitting here going, what the hell?
No, you didn't send me a message. I didn't know. I would have been like, hang on a second, Josh is trying to...
I'm trying to get word in edgewise. No, it sort of frustrates me, and I think that I know I've mentioned it before. I think that it's a factor. The reason we're paid what we are is because it's a factor of community education. I mean, think about it. We get minimum wage or thereabouts, and sometimes we're charged with making life and death decisions. I don't know about you, but you know, if I were just sitting in the public eye, I would expect that, you know, in the public venue and with an eye towards EMS, I would really expect that they would be much better compensated for the job that they're supposed to be doing and the responsibilities that they take on. And I think that it's one of the big secrets that that our communities sort of keep and representatives keep, because mm-hmm. Oh, God help them if they really have to pay more, if they have to pay a living wage.
Well, and that, and they, how they continue to rely on volunteers, you know, and expect these people that are doing it for free to, you know, continue to get more and more education and everything, and then yet they're upset when they're not getting the ambulance as fast as they want it.
Yeah, but
you know,
quite a few stations will pay and help offset, either pay full or help offset the ongoing training.
Yeah, but do you think they'd pay if they could get the volunteers? I mean, they will all offset the training. I think that I think in some states it's a requirement. You know that
mm-hmm.
that you're
yeah.
as long as you're part of an organization, your continued training is their responsibility. It's your responsibility, but paying for it is theirs, or it's back funded by the state. You know, because
mm-hmm.
they don't want to lose the skill sets. But honestly, if they could staff a 24-hour bus with all volunteers, you think they could pay crews?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the volunteers that I guess have started EMS and been in EMS for so long that now that people don't have the time they used to volunteer, they still want the same services. You know, they don't want to pay for them. And then we get put into these, you know, situations where, you know, that people are not getting ambulances and stuff. But it's not every place.
I want to have my cake and eat it too.
Yeah. Well, I want to go on to another topic, or sort of wrap this end of it up. But I want to just talk about the sponsor real quick, EMS Manager Josh. You know, they sponsored EMS Office Hours this week, as they have been, and I appreciate that.
And we do. We
yeah.
appreciate that.
I encourage
we thank
people,
them.
Yeah, I encourage people to go try out their software for themselves. It really does take the chore out of scheduling and management of EMS providers, and it makes it easy to set it up, and it's easy to maintain and manage as well. You know, I mentioned this before, they got a mobile app. You can get access to the software from any mobile device, smartphone, or any place you have a web interface. You can get online and you can access it, and you can do it. The employees, the managers, the staff can all manage and oversee any requests or changes to the employee schedule. So, and of course, my favorite part is the pricing, because it is based on the size of an organization. We talk about volunteers and they don't have all that much money, but what scheduling is a big part. Sometimes at some volley agencies that have to schedule at least a skeleton crew. So something like that's always affordable. You know, it's web-based. The employee schedule, the software, it's all located in the cloud, and that means there are no additional IT costs to worry about. There's always free training, free tech support, and free system software updates. So if you want this system, go check it out for free. You can get a customized trial of EMS Manager at emsmanager.net. And again, I want to thank them for sponsoring EMS Office Hours, as well as many of your other favorite EMS programs from the ProMed Network. EMS Manager is proud to support EMS providers and manage through this sponsorship, and they support what we do. Show your support for them, guys. Go take a few minutes. Check out their free trial at emsmanager.net. It's from Alatech. It's EMS Manager for online employee scheduling and workforce management. Again, emsmanager.net. I'll put a link in the show notes. Get their customized trial there, guys. If you do go there, be sure to tell them that EMS Office Hours sent you there, that Jim and Josh recommended that you give them a quick trial and see what it's all about. So tell them we sent you when you go there. Josh, one thing I wanted to mention is this other article that I just saw Jem's posted. It's about in Iowa, about, and we talk about, you said about, you know, public awareness and public education and all. And they talk about how the public has to demand, you know, changes in EMS. And it's funny because I was reading the article, and one part sort of ties into the main topic of tonight, where they talk about this, in Iowa, the state does not require mandatory background checks for EMTs, and that the Register, which I think is the newspaper, examined about 500 EMS disciplinary cases and they found numerous instances of the EMTs who had either fabricated their claims of training and education or failed to report serious criminal convictions, including things like theft, assault, drug abuse, and sex crimes.
What? Isn't this what I was just frickin' talking about? I mean, come on. The public has to demand this. If we don't get it, improvements can't be made until there's an outcry.
And it's funny because if you read the article, they talk about...
What is he, listening to our show?
I know. Well, I must have read my mind because, you know, like I said, this article, she was just posted on Facebook. I just happened to catch it beforehand. You know, it was April 13th was the article date on it. And it's funny because, you know, you talk about this back, just a background check part of, you know. And they talk about how it's a no-brainer. Just, you know, let them, you know, go ahead and have background checks, you know. And the other one person says, how can you have EMTs laying hands on people inside their homes where they have access to everything that's there and not require criminal background checks?
Well, you know, people don't kill people. Medics kill people.
Well, the thing is, not even about that. It's about, you know, taking the jewelry on the counter or you know, helping themselves to drugs that the patient might be on.
Right.
You know, credit cards that might be laying around. Even people that can do things like identity theft. You know, how many times do you go to people's houses and have their mail sitting out?
You don't even need their mail. You go, how many times you sit there and you go, your name, your birthday, security number,
exactly.
Right on the paperwork that you have.
Exactly. You're writing, oh, can you have your social security number?
We had to do criminal background, and we also had to do the child abuse background.
For the volley agency that you're with?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're paid and volley. We're both. But he had us do that as well, and I respected them for that because, you know, they were taking the initiative and the responsibility to make sure that we're, you know, properly, you know, out in the community and that they can trust and have the faith in us as well.
And that's important, though, that the article mentions that. I mean, this is just Iowa here, but they talk about how some agencies, they do the checks voluntarily. There's no, like, mandation. You know, there's no thing that says that mandates all EMS agencies to do this.
Hey, listen, we had the opportunity for a national standard when EMS was formed. And as a matter of fact, we started creating the national standard. But when, you know, states' rights sort of took hold in the early 80s and, you know, power was put back to the states and services were pushed back to the states, which means states had to pay for them. That's where we became the orphans, you know, the bastard redheaded stepchildren that we are in the system today. And you know, I've said this before, Jim, and, you know, we own this. It's the people who are on the buses, the people who are in the station houses, the volunteers and the paid people. If we don't educate the public, if we don't tell our family and friends what this potential disaster that we have called EMS is sitting there looming in the shadows, then nobody's going to want anything fixed. Mm-hmm. And remember how we started. I mean, we started by, you know, a good idea brought over from Ireland. It was then picked up by the media. It was televised as a show. And suddenly people around the country said, holy crap, we can have people come and save lives by coming directly to our house, because that was never in existence before. And then, you know, and recalling this history is important because, you know, if we're able to understand our history, we're able to build a new future. And, you know, until the public is there, they desire it because, you know, from television, they said they saw that it was Cape possible and they got these people. But television paints an overly rosy picture. They're usually almost always professionals. They're usually almost always competent. You know, they make good TV. They show up. They do their things. They hang out of helicopters and they, you know, disable bombs and crazy stuff. But they're always shown as capable. And if you know, we and think of what would happen if they had an EMS show or an EMS based show that showed, you know, the worst of EMS.
Yeah, you don't see what's going on where I am.
It'd be pretty scary, right?
Yeah, you don't know what's going on there.
You know, I'm not advocating that either, because I honestly don't want to deal with the feedback of, you know, transporting a patient. And they say, oh, yeah, I saw you on Dumbasses last night. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, that's an overly stylized example, blah, blah, blah. But
yeah,
explain it after it's out there.
Yeah, John said they call it trauma or Chicago Fire.
Yeah, and trauma, you know, Chicago Fire is, granted, it's way the fuck out there. Excuse my language. But trauma wasn't that bad. A lot of people gave it a hard time, but they really hit upon some of the things later on, and they started adjusting their script to more real life. If people recall towards the end, you know, I don't remember what the hell that Yahoo was, that his name, but he got suspended for actions where – you know, that weren't proper and proper.
And, you know, it's funny, Judge, because like you just said, it's, you know, part of it, and like this article even, is how the public has to demand these changes and demand, you know, what goes on in EMS. And when you've got a show like that, that, you know, shows people, maybe not, you know, accurate the way we would like it, but shows what can be done, if they don't see that being done, they don't see this equipment, and it allows them to question it, you know,
right,
allows them to question.
Faith, still on? Faith, are you still there?
I'm here, yes.
So, yeah.
So do you have, when you joined the service, were you given a shield and a uniform? Well, I mean, how do you present to the public?
Well, we buy our own pants, and then we're given the shirt. We wear the white shirt with the firehouse patch and the EMS patch.
And do you any shields, or are those optional? Can you get them yourself?
No, we don't. A lot of the places that I've seen here locally in the Lehigh Valley, they don't wear shields.
Right. That's sort of a sometimes thing. It's popular in some areas, not so popular
mm-hmm.
in others. How different do you look from your local police department?
Well, the uniforms are pretty, you know, the pants are quite different, but as people see the shirt, and they don't always look at the color of the shirt, so quite often people, like especially depending on the patient, will start to talk to us, and they get, you know, a little upset until we, you know, sometimes we've explained we're not the police, you know, we're here with the ambulance service, we're here to, you know, just to help you and take care of you, and, you know, then they, you know, calm down a little bit, because our police around here usually wear blue or khaki.
I'm glad you said that it's different, but you still get mistaken by as the police, and that I've seen
an authority thing. They just
exactly. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. That's what they're perceiving it as. You know, they see you there, you're in uniform. They know somebody called 911. You know, so they see it as an authority, you know, type thing, which again goes back to the screening issue of it, where, you know, if you're not, you know, qualified to be there, you know, and you know, it's like, you know, you can't, that trust that should be there, you know, isn't necessarily there, you know,
right.
Because
well,
they don't know.
As soon as you walk in, you know, if you know what you're doing and you're comfortable with what you're doing, they're going to sense that, and they're going to, you know, calm down and start talk to you, and you can do your assessment a lot quicker and easier, because they're going to start to trust you, because A, you are professional, but B, they're comfortable with you because you know what you're doing. Because somebody like you, if you go into a mechanic, and you can pretty much tell right off the bat that they don't know what the hell they're doing, they're an idiot, you're going to turn around and take your car somewhere else.
Yeah,
if you have the choice.
No, but it's true. I mean, she makes a good point, Josh, because like
yeah,
I said,
you've said it many times, Jim.
Like I said earlier on in the show about how, you know, introducing yourself and letting the patient know what's happening and what you're doing to them, what you want to do and what's going to happen is all part of building that trust up. You know,
and where do people learn that? You know, I mean, certainly there are individuals that are sort of have the gift of gab, have that ease around other people, are able to sort of swing it and introduce themselves. But when you're on a medical call, there are certain things you say and you don't say. How do you learn those things? You learn them on the job. Do you ever really go through those sort of scenarios when you're training?
No.
You know?
No.
And even more to what the show is about, and even if you do go through those scenarios, certainly they're not stressed on you passing the test. You could be a total –
it's like one question.
Even less, and you could be a total jerk at it, fail it completely, and still get through the course. Then the next stop, the next, you know, hurdle is getting that job and being screened correctly. How many organizations screen for your professional demeanor, how you present yourself,
I don't know how often you see it or not, but I know that I've seen people come in for job interviews and they're not even wearing a button-down shirt, you know.
Yeah, don't get me started there.
So it's like, you know, but you know that if they were going for a job, you know, with a fire department or a police department where there was going to be screening going on, whether it's screening for their personality, you know, for background checks, for drug tests, for psychological type things, you know, they're going to dress much more appropriately than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know if it's because of this mentality that EMS is somehow a lesser profession. But again, you know, like I mentioned before, it's like you're whether you're paid or you volunteer, you know, a lot of people that they go to EMT school, they get out and they were walking to people's houses, and you don't know, you know, in their lifetime how many times they've stolen or you know, even things like you know, sex abuse or something like that. You have no idea.
You know, and that's
for a majority, I think, of agencies just don't do, you know, stringent enough background checks.
And who does that harm in the end? Is it really the public, or is it the people who work with those individuals?
I think it hurts everybody. I think it hurts the patients that, you know, especially when the person is actually acting on why, you know, something wasn't found out. But I think it also can affect the partner, can affect, you know, an agency, you know, if agency gets sued because they didn't do a background check.
But here's one of the important points about where I was going with that, Jim. You get on the bus, all right, and you and I have talked about this offline numerous times, and how you get a new kid, a new EMT, who's fresh, wet behind the ears, and is driving you, and you have to scream up front, hey, listen, slow it down. Hey, listen, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you're probably telling them 5, 6, 10 times, you know, in a transport, you know, to change what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
And where I'm going with that is, you know, it's your right. I mean, my God, OSHA creates a federal law around it. It's your right to go to your job with the expectations that you will go home.
Yeah.
You know, except for very few, even dangerous jobs, they bend over backwards to give you every opportunity to be safe, to get out there. They create rules about entry into dangerous positions. Certainly there's aspects and there's ideas of the job that you're going to put yourself in harm's way, but they do everything they can to mitigate that harm. In the police department, you're given bulletproof vests, you're given training, you're given backup, you're given support, you're given rules not to engage unless, you know, you have those things. In the fire department, you act as a team, you don't act as an individual. Where does that gap happen? It happens right in the EMS. So, I mean, don't we have the same right as anybody else to be able
sure.
to?
Well, I think even like Faith had mentioned too, where you're not the training, you know, we don't have necessarily academies that we go through. You know, where you have police academies, you've got fire academies, and EMS isn't really an academy. It's like it's this certification course you're going through.
And before
it's not an academy.
Before people jump on us, I know, you know, Jim and I are from New York. The FDNY has an academy. I know there are lots of academies around
sure.
the country.
Sure.
And we're not even really addressing that. We're more talking about the standards that are uniform across the country. Those are organizations that have learned through trial and error that it's better to uniformly teach and train their people because they can maintain a higher standard of individual and feel out that individual before they put them in a place of responsibility. But there are a lot of organizations that are just either, you know, too hungry or too cheap to ensure that. And that affects everybody.
Yeah, well, talking about that article, you know, there was one of the chiefs there talked about how he does a national background check on his employees every year, every 5 years. And it gives him that peace of mind to know that he has, you know, quality people working there. So there's an investment that has to be made in a lot of this type of stuff too. You know, this stuff costs money. And maybe that's why it's not as strict as it should be, because it does cost money. Well, you've got bigger budgets for police departments and bigger budgets for fire departments. You don't have that for EMS, especially for agencies that are volunteer or partly volunteer, where a lot of their money comes from donations or grants and things like that. They don't have this this extra funding to go around doing, you know, exhaustive background checks on their personnel. You know, but I still have to argue that I think, you know, the public and the people that were coming in contact with, you know, kind of deserve that peace of mind to know that, you know, they're not going to get robbed or molested by anybody. And it's not foolproof. You know,
no, it never is.
Everybody has
that
little switch in their head that you never know when it's going to, you know, get flipped on at some point. You know, that's the whole going postal thing, you know.
And certainly there are variations that occur. But, you know, when you do some screening is better than no screening. A thorough screening is certainly better than some screening. And, you know, and screening combined with training, combined with critical assessment of an individual is the best. And even there, you're not foolproof. Yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, you've heard stories of cops going rogue and things like that. And I would say, you know, our standards in society, it seems from my perspective anyway, and I'll put that in there, that cops get the highest level of vetting there is. And that's sort of why I was sort of, you know, impressed and sort of pulled out when Faith, you know, got on and said, oh, you know, I took the exam. I took, you know, I went through it and I passed it. They were ready to accept me, you know, and I didn't go. And I'm like, whoa, you know, that's a unique position. Not a lot of people do that. But also, you know, mind with that, she was looking at, you know, what did she want to do? A lot of people, you know, we joke about how, you know, how to get into EMS want to become police officers. It's their end drive, and so when they fail the test, it's a real big disappointment, and they're taking EMS as a second tier, well, I got to have a job, and I still want to work lights and sirens.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that they're a bad person for not passing, you know, the police officer, you know, psychiatric exam, or that they're not qualified to be in EMS.
You know, I mean, what? But it is a red flag, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I think that there is
not a flag, really.
Well, no. I mean, I think that there is different reasons or different criteria that you check for when you're trying to be a police officer as opposed to being a medical provider.
I'm wondering how much is it different in terms of the values that we need in a public servant.
Well, I think there's a lot of similarities, probably. I think, you know, that they can gear it towards, but I don't know as far as it being the type of thing. Well, if you can't pass the police, then you can't be an EMT.
You know, I mean, is that I? You know, look, I'd like to put it out there. I'd like to hang that out there as a question that says, hey, if you don't pass the police exam, is it fair to say that you're not qualified to become an EMT?
Yeah.
You know, that's
well, the fields are completely different. They're two completely different fields of work, two different types of personalities.
Are they completely different? I mean, really, truly, they're first responders in the public eye. They're overall there for the public safety. Their individual tasks, I'll agree with you, Faith, are completely different. But the mm-hmm. mindset that the individual, they have to be
okay.
trustworthy, responsible, ready for action, ready to do what's required.
Right. There are no rain or sleet or snow. Oh, wait.
So, like the police officers, you're saying that they're taken more seriously by the general public. So, maybe do you think that if the general public was taught more about EMS, what it's really about, what we do, that there'd be a change in the EMS calls instead of all the I stub my toe, I need you to come get me at 2:00 in the morning?
Do you think
that's part of not taking us seriously?
I think that. That's part of, well, there's two ends that work into that. There's the individual and their concept of what's important to themselves. And certainly I've had patients who have done something ridiculously minor and either don't understand that it's ridiculously minor and very scared, you know, or they think that, my God, what happened to them is the worst thing that they ever happened. You know, I stubbed my toe or I cut my hand or something like that. This is unbelievable. There's so much blood. You know, I've got to go to the emergency room. And where we've seen amputations and major trauma, and we're saying, listen, I'm pretty sure you're going to survive this.
Right.
You know, so
well,
do you think
it's the most BS calls? Do you think police get more BS calls or do we?
I think that it's relatively – I think I'll go out on a limb and say it's relatively equal. There's a lot of nonsense.
Really?
There's a great deal of nonsense that happens
That's
in the police
true.
Department. Great deal.
Yeah.
I have lots of friends who are cops, and the stories that they say and the things that people do, and it's like, you know, we have a saying in first responderism. You know, we sort of own it within EMS, but it's not ours alone. It's everybody's. There's a cure for stupid. So I think in some ways, Faith, the truth is we would get those jobs. But I think with the public awareness, there would be a sort of a slightly better triage and understanding of when to call. And keep in mind, a lot of communities are putting out those sort of public awareness announcements, when to call an ambulance. Mm-hmm. You know, this is important, call an ambulance. This is not important. Do you really need to call an ambulance for this? You know, because they're, you know, right now, regardless of being paid or volunteers, a lot of systems are taxed to the limit anyway and can't, you know, and can't handle the call volume and have to find a way of managing it better. And part of that is public education. You know, we're saying in this, you know, show that there's another aspect of public education that would serve us, the individual responders, better. And that would give us a higher quality of work partner and a safer work environment, as well as possibly a living wage. Although I'll
That's
hold
true, because if it was seen as more of a professional job, like some of the other jobs out there, then there would be that respect, and then there would probably be easier to get the funding and the you know, people to stand behind and help, you know, bring it up to where it needs to be.
Exactly.
The funny thing is that, you know, as often happens on the show, is that we end up going back to the fact that a lot of the issues go back to money. You know, the lack of money, which, you know, turned into lack of staffing and then the lack of education, the lack of equipment, you know. But it's still like you go round and round. But then how do you get that? Well, you got to get the public involved so that they know what we can do and what, you know, that they have to, you know, demand that we get the funding we need to pay for the new ambulances and stuff like that. You know, where you see the firehouse that gets the new fire truck and they don't do half as many calls as EMS, but yet EMS has to go out there and rattle the can to get funds, you know, to buy an ambulance. You know, and they do, you know, three times as many calls each year. So it's there is a public perception there, you know, as far as who needs it, you know, more. And I encourage you guys, I don't know if you guys are on Facebook or not, to go to the GEMS page and look at this article and some of the comments going on with the you know, that this article there. Some pretty interesting comments going. Skip Kirkwood made some comments there that I thought were pretty interesting regarding this article. So go check that out. Faith, thanks for calling in. We're going to wrap this up. I appreciate you calling in and giving us your
big time. Thank you.
Your thoughts on it. You have a Facebook page, Faith, or a Twitter account or like that. You want to promo to maybe get some followers or something?
No, I'm just out there. You know, I want to follow a lot of the other pages, and I, you know, try and listen to you guys on Sunday nights. You know, it's interesting hearing what you guys have to say and pulling it into play with things that I do, and it's helping grounding me out and see things a little differently, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bring a friend next time.
And anytime you have, you feel free to email us if you have any questions or ideas, and you know,
we're
sure to discuss it. And if you need it offline, we're here as well. You know, both Jim and I are medics in the field for a while.
All right, thanks. Stay safe, guys.
All right, you too, Faith. Thank you.
Bye.
Another humble public service.
Exactly.
That was very cool. She's cool.
Yeah. All right, Josh, let me wrap it up there.
Awesome.
I guess we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Thanks, John, over in the chat room at One Union 801, the webcast. Go check out John's blog and his radio show right here at Blog Talk Radio.
And maybe he'll get his partner, Dee, to actually comment there.
I don't think she...
She's just silent in the background.
I don't even know if that's a real person. I think
You know what? You're right. I think John made her up.
Yeah, it's his cat.
It's his cat. Yep.
That's it. Yeah, that's what it is.
We'll get you Friskies next time, John.
Yeah. That's what that is. It's his cat. I knew it. All right. Well, Josh, that's pretty much it. I guess we'll talk to you next week.
All right, buddy.
All right. Have a good one. All right, everybody, that's it for tonight. Again, any questions, comments, concerns, you want to have a topic here on the show, send it over to me. My address is jhoffman@ems-safety.com. I'd love to go ahead and get a show going on something that you're passionate about in EMS as well. I'm sure Josh and I will beat it to death for an hour. So send it over to me. Be sure to comment below in the show notes, either here at Blog Talk Radio or on the blog at emsofficehours.com. Until next week, as always, Jim Hoffman, stay safe.